when there came the fusion of the to create the mestizo, which is a combination of a European and an indigenous person, it I think that's where people got it. Were like, hey, you know what? The white is right. You know, there's the beautiful green eyes and all kinds, all shades, all colors are beautiful in their own way. I think also when it came to the religion, when they wanted to impose the Catholic religion on the indigenous people in Mexico, most of the paintings and everything, you know, Jesus is white, green eyes, the Virgin Mary as well.
I'm on the wider spectrum. Yeah. It's easier for me to integrate. And it's not until I say something in Spanish that people are like, oh, wait a minute, you ain't from around here.
Right.
So, you know, it again, it's just historically, it's to your point, Christian, it's the dominant, the richer, the white European has kind of forced that upon the rest of the world, the rest of the country here.
Yeah. I mean, going back to, I know that it was a way of an escape to their current situation at the time. I mean, this even goes back into slavery. Why some slaves would try to be with the white man because it's like, oh, they're going to save us and we're going to get out of here. It's the same thing in the islands and the same thing in the other countries.
That's right.
But then it came into what is now of the whole integration and stuff is the privilege. You see it everywhere. And if you don't see it, it's because you're choosing not to.
That's
it's
right.
Blatant. Mm-hmm.
With that, I mean, it all goes down to history, right? It's that European mindset. Even if you look at other cultures, everybody has that sort of tip in their mind that if you are of lighter skin, that means that you're richer, right? Because you probably don't have to be out working in the fields, mm-hmm. you know. So with that mindset, you hear it so much. It gets passed down generation to generation to what we have today. But to your point, Martin, it is more talked about and emphasized in the United States than anywhere else. Like growing up in Colombia, I open a box of crayons, I draw myself, I would choose the color piel, which means skin. And that color, you put it on a piece of paper, it looks, you know, like a neutral pale color. Versus when I came here and I started drawing myself, I started choosing a light brown, a caramel. It wasn't until I got here that I realized I was brown.
Welcome to First Gens. This is a podcast about first generation Americans and filling in the blanks beside the what?
Hype!
Hey! Oh, that was perfect.
I know.
Oh, I am Perrine DeShield.
And I am Perfection Sky Wilson.
I kind of set
you
her
just
up for that.
Me perfect,
I completely set her up for that. I will own that.
Yeah, you should.
Oh,
and I will
man.
Own my perfection.
Man, so this season has been, you know, a ride. You know, we have tapped on a lot of different things.
Yes.
And we've been able to kind of share a lot of connections that we have with a lot of these cultures, whether we may be a part of them or we may just like have a love for that culture and different aspects of it, or just ways that we can relate to it. And today, we're actually going to be talking to our Latinx community.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty different than most other ethnicities in terms of the fact that there are multiple races that mm-hmm. make up this ethnicity. I think that the way that we categorize race and ethnicity in this country and in the world writ large, I can't think of another like ethnic group that happens with in terms of like having multiple racial identities in the right. same way and distinct ways that yeah. Latinx folks do.
Right. And so something that, you know, we tapped on with our Indian roundtable group and our individual story with our Indian group was the caste system. And so basically the caste system is something that breaks down socioeconomic status and how that correlates with color and race and, well, colorism specifically. And in a lot in a lot of Latinx communities, there was like the 1700 Spanish caste system that kind of did something similar. And like what Sky was saying, you know, there's so many different racial groups that are part of this community. And something that we've been able to kind of pull in relation to colorism is just kind of this desire to be white passing.
Yes.
And it may be something that's intentional for some, but something completely unintentional for many. But when I was doing research as well, it showed that a lot of Latinx people who may be Puerto Rican or Dominican specifically, they resonate and kind of say that they are white opposed to any other race, when in actuality, they have like over 40% African heritage within them. And so it's kind of like, you know, why is that?
Well, you want to be closer to what's quote unquote, what's going to be better for you and what's going to get you ahead in life. And that's what will get you ahead in life, that privilege, you know? I'm even like thinking particularly around the Dominican Republic and the fact that it's not a standalone island, as you may know or may not. It shares an island with Haiti, which is a very black country.
Yes, it is.
And it's, you know,
as it is.
Like border lines are just man-made lines that we literally drew on a map. Mm-hmm. So these are the same people across Haiti and the Dominican Republic. I mean, you know, having to account for, of course, for like migration and all of that kind of stuff. But like in terms of like folks who are native to that island.
Yeah.
They're the same.
Yeah, they are. That's something that I could never really fully understand. I mean, now I do, I think, because obviously talking about it and talking more about this theme of colorism and how it really plays a huge role within this community, you can't not, you know, kind of ignore that. And so we're happy to have a really diverse roundtable discussion today and have a lot of really amazing Latinx people from all different places to kind of, you know, share their knowledge, their two cents on, you know, what it means to be Latinx and how, again, you know, that relates to this thing called colorism.
Wow, wow, wow.
We're gonna pep them up, Sky.
Let's hear it for the round table. Clap, 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 clap.
All right. Okay, cool. My name is Christian Robles. I culturally identify as Mexican American.
Martin Flores. I culturally identify as Latino, with Cuban and Salvadorian descendants.
Hey guys, I'm Nysla. I identify as Colombian American, even though I was actually born in Colombia and raised there.
My name is Yashira Mejia. Everybody calls me Yoshi. I identify as Afro Latin. My mom is Puerto Rican. My dad's from Nicaragua.
Nice, nice. All right, so how would you all define colorism?
Boom, straight to it.
I define colorism as a probably as a privilege, just because of the color of your skin.
I look at colorism as, you know, a wide spectrum, especially in the Latino community. I mean, we come in a wide range of shapes, colors, sizes, eye shapes. I mean, just even looking around the table here, we've got so many shades. It's amazing. So, just being able to identify, I mean, just. Again, it's not just black, it's not just brown, it's not just white. I mean, I look at colorism and I'm like, it's a whole rainbow of colors when it comes to the Latino culture and the Latino community.
Yeah, I have to agree with Martin, but to me, colorism is something that we focus on and tend to look a little bit deeper when you're in the United States. When we talk about America, growing up in Colombia, to me, colorism wasn't even a topic at the table with my family.
Colorism to me is a mix of literally everything you guys have already said, because historically and even just to present day, it doesn't necessarily matter where you're at that you're going to deal with it. Just point blank period.
All right, so can you all describe an early memory, like when you became aware of your complexion specifically and or your culture?
Yeah, I can tell you on that one. So I can probably tell you it was 2001, January 23rd. It was when we first arrived to America, the United States, which I find it hilarious saying America because, you know, technically, you know, Colombia's in South America. That's America. But we arrived to Florida, which we had been there before, you know, to see Mickey and Minnie Mouse. And I got there to school and, you know, we got there to class, Mrs. Murphy class, fourth grade. Never forget her. She had M&Ms. So she was real. Yeah. I was like, okay, I'm staying in this country. And the teacher asked, hey, guys, who in here speaks Spanish? You know, in my broken Spanish English that I knew at that time. And this one girl raised her hand, and her name was Amber. And she, and then, then they asked me, where are you from? So then I naturally said Bogota, because when you're in Colombia, mm-hmm. you say the city that you're from. You don't realize you're Colombian. Like, that's known. So I said, oh, I'm from Bogota. And everybody was like, is that like in Europe? And, you know, and you have to remember this is Amber that's translating to me. And I'm like, what do you mean? You don't know where Bogota is from? And so I had to show the map and show them. And that's when I realized, oh, not everybody here knows what Colombia, where Colombia is, or that I'm different. And everybody had assumed that because everybody else in the class that spoke Spanish was from Mexico or Mexican parents, they had assumed I was Mexican. And to that point, I had never even had a burrito. And my last name is Barreto, so you can just imagine the the games, the puns. So that's the first time I realized I was different.
Dang. For me, I was just the darkest one. That's just literally what it was. I was the darkest complexion on both my mom and my dad's side. But I was little, and I just questioned everything. It wasn't until I had my little sister, which we're 22 months apart, so we're fairly close. She's very fair-skinned. And so it got to the point where if I was hanging out with my dad, which he's a little bit more a mix of both, they would ask him about my little sister. It's like, oh, is that your daughter's little friend? Like, it was always, how can you guys be sisters? You guys look nothing alike. And I've always been naturally nurturing and protective. And I'm like, it doesn't matter. That's my sister. So, like, what's up? So I've always had it. And then as far as identity, that has always been, I don't want to say that it was confusing and I felt like, oh, my God, what am I or who am I? It was just more of like, why do I have to check a box? Like, I'm not understanding this. Like, this is crazy. Other than that, I've just always been so strong-willed. And I'm like, no, I know that I'm this. Just, it shouldn't matter. Like, if you like me, you like me. If don't, that's it. But ever since little, I always felt like someone wasn't right. And it wasn't me. It was the world.
That's right. Yeah. You tell them.
I guess for me, it's always been that way. Being Mexican-American and born in San Diego, but actually lived in Mexico until I was 13 in Tijuana, Mexico. We would cross the border every single day to just do simple activities, meet family. My grandma lived in San Diego, but we were always considered the brothers or the cousins that lived in Mexico. So right then and there, we already were... I guess if you want to call it this, one step below, just because the money is worth a lot less in Mexico. And my dad was a teacher, math, physics, and chemistry. So even though he was very well educated and had a decent job in Mexico, any other job in the United States at that point was just above. So even though we were all family and we were all Mexican and from the same descent, and for the most part, we were always the poor family, and it wasn't so much because of the color of your skin, but it was just like that, and it just didn't help that we had to learn English growing up. So right then and there, when I would go to school, and I was in track B, that they call it, because there was different tracks. Track B was usually the bilingual track of, so you would get taught in both English and Spanish. So right then and there, you get categorized in another category. So first of all, you're Mexican American. You're already darker than most of the other kids in the school. Even though you do go to school with other Mexican Americans, but even like playing recess, it would be we would play Foursquare, and it was always the Mexicans against the gringos, and so or the Latinos just in general. So ever since I was little, it was always like un pie aquí y un pie allá, one leg here, one leg there. And so you're not from here, but you're not from there. So you're always stuck in the middle, going back and forth. So I think that, ever since I've been little, I've seen just the differences already.
That's funny you say that, because when I see you on the lighter spectrum of the colorism of Latinos. You know, like to me, you're white.
Yeah.
So that's interesting.
And so just even in high school, I was always stuck in the middle where just deep at heart, just because I grew up in Mexico, I consider myself Mexican. But even here, I get confused as like, hey, are you Colombian? Not that that's bad, but it's like, no, I'm Mexican. And then they go, well, you don't look Mexican. I'm like, what is Mexico supposed to look like? You know what I mean? So it doesn't bother me. It's just people that they don't know what they don't know. So,
but when people ask you if you're Colombian, it's not an insult.
No,
but I do feel like a lot of times if people say like, "Oh, are you Mexican?" and if you're not Mexican, people react like it's an insult.
Correct.
Or like, "Oh, you think I'm Mexican?" and I'm not really sure why that happens. Well, but just the point to that, you know what I mean? Where I'm like, "Yeah, no, I feel lucky that you think I'm from different parts. Maybe I could be, yeah."
Right. No, I could definitely attest to that, because the whole Puerto Rican Mexican, I feel like, granted, within your own community, there's always this fake beef or real beef, or even within your own community, right? For me, it was just more of the ignorance of why is it as soon as you say you're Spanish, that's the first place they say it. So it gets frustrating. But nonetheless, it's just like, do you not have any Mexican friends? I know, like, I've been there, and it's just like the culture, the history, and then we go into what Afro-Latin is and stuff. Like, it's just, that's nothing, but it's just frustrating that it's the first thing that they say, and it's just like, oh my God.
Well, with me, it was, I was born in Chicago, but when I was five, my family moved down to Miami. Miami is just a huge melting pot of just cultures and just all ethnicities and, again, my mom is Cuban. My dad's from El Salvador. And talk about all shapes and shades of color. My family comes in all shades of color. I mean, I got black cousins. I got white cousins with, green eyes and blonde hair. So, from an entire spectrum. It wasn't until I moved out of Miami in my late 20s that I realized, hey, I'm different. And it was a bit of a culture shock. I mean, I remember leaving Miami, coming to the Carolinas, in the southeast of the country, and people were telling me, be careful, because it's different. You're going to be treated differently. And, I kind of was a little bit naive, again, in my late 20s. And, I had a daughter, my wife. When people found out that I was Latino, their first question, okay, well, where from? I'd say, well, my mom's Cuban, my dad's from El Salvador. And it was always like, well, okay, where in Mexico is that? And people, I can't tell you the number of times that people would literally ask me that. And it's extremely frustrating. It's like, I know we teach geography in school, right? So it's a little frustrating, nonetheless, to say, no, Cuba's an island in the Caribbean, and El Salvador is a country in Central America.
Right.
So it's I found myself educating, or at least being that educator, at every opportunity that I could.
Just to piggyback on that, I think after I grew up and I started to mature, after going probably in high school is when I started to do that. When we moved to Washington State, to continue our education. That's where I really realized, hey, you know what? Like, don't get upset. It's not a bad thing. It's just most of the time I would take it as a learning experience or a teaching moment for everybody else. Some people take it like, hey, and usually react in a positive way. And they say, thank you so much for letting me know. Like, I had no clue. Or some people just don't care. Mm-hmm. So at that point, you did your part to try to educate them. And at the end of the day, it's on them from there on. You know?
Yeah. And all of those questions from people that come to us is because of the shade of our skin, right? Mm-hmm. You wouldn't ask a Latino that had blonde hair, blue eyes, are you from Mexico? So it's just something very interesting to me when I think of colorism within our Latino community.
Mm-hmm. Well, then that kind of goes into the history of it, right? So going back to a comment I made about checking a box, one thing that, I mean, I'm going to speak to what is in Puerto Rico specifically. There's a lot of Puerto Ricans that identify, majority of the island identifies as white. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that goes into what thinking is what white is right. And so it's the whole, look, I need to be better, or that's why they seek their mate to be of a white descent, a European descent, because they think it's rich or what have you. And it's just, it's sad. And then it's just like, if it works for them, that's what it is. But it's kind of like where you come in with what colorism is. And it's just the understanding of history. If you're darker, you're treated differently, and it's not the best way. So it's like, how can I get better to that? So when you're saying about, oh, anybody else that's Latin that happens to be blue eyes and blonde hair, it's like, oh no, it's impossible that you're from Mexico. Like, yeah, right, I'm not gonna buy it. Yeah. And it's the whole, well, no, you must be white because you look like this, and it's the European standard.
Why do you think that so many people of Latin descent kind of gravitate towards that whole like whiteness? Because I think there is something to be said with the culture and being white passing.
So I guess in Mexico, it's huge. Most people in Mexico are either heavily weighted over to the European side, like Spaniard, or heavily weighted over to the indigenous side, like Aztec, Mayan, that type. When there came the fusion of the to create the mestizo, which is a combination of a European and a indigenous person, it I think that's where people got it. Were like, hey, you know what? The white is right. You know, there's the beautiful green eyes and all kinds, all shades, all colors are beautiful in their own way. It's just, you know, it turned into the whole, well, this is the way, this is the right way. And so I think also when it came to the religion, when they wanted to impose the Catholic religion on the indigenous people in Mexico, most of the paintings and everything, you know, Jesus is white, green eyes, the Virgin Mary as well. So I think a lot of that fusion and that culture came in and it just took over. And I wouldn't say 100% killed the culture that was already there. That was great. That was huge. You know, the Aztecs were huge in Mexico, lasted forever. But I think that's where, you know, it just gets lost. Yeah.
Well, and we talk about, it was funny. I was having a conversation today with someone from the UK, and they were saying that they didn't realize how much color and how much, race was an issue until they came here to the U.S. And obviously here with our current climate, it's obviously a big issue. It's a current topic of conversation. And ultimately, you know, we look at generations, you know, looking historically, every generation that has come before our current period, the whiter skin, the more European you look, the easier it was to integrate. So if you go back and you look at the late 1800s with the migration of the Irish coming here to the U.S., the Irish were looked at as again, traitors coming into this country. They're going to take our jobs. They're going to – so it's a lot of what you hear today. And but because they were able to integrate and mix in to that white
look
mentality
English,
and right. that white – yeah, the white physical appearance – they've been able to integrate, or they were able to integrate, you know, and again, looking at it, you know, I'm white. I'm on the wider spectrum. Yeah. It's easier for me to integrate. And it's not until I say something in Spanish that people are like, oh, wait a minute, you ain't from around here.
Right.
So, you know, it again, it's just historically, it's to your point, Christian, it's the dominant, the richer, the white European has kind of forced that upon the rest of the world, the rest of the country here.
Yeah. I mean, going back to, I know that it was a way of an escape to their current situation at the time. I mean, this even goes back into slavery. Why some slaves would try to be with the white man because it's like, oh, they're going to save us and we're going to get out of here. It's the same thing in the islands and the same thing in the other countries.
That's right.
But then it came into what is now of the whole integration and stuff is the privilege. You see it everywhere. And if you don't see it, it's because you're choosing not to.
That's
it's
right.
Blatant. Mm-hmm. We see it on our news and it's just, it's disheartening because what we're seeing now is just, it's about the human race, but they still going to make it about the second word regardless. And I think that's just how the white culture and why they react that way is because they're also intimidated. Everybody's mixed nowadays. Like, it's give it another year. It's not going to be anything just plain white.
Yeah.
It's leaving. So they're scared.
And I think with that, I mean, it all goes down to history, right? It's that European mindset. Even if you look at other cultures, everybody has that sort of tip in their mind that if you are of lighter skin, that means that you're richer, right? Because you probably don't have to be out working in the fields, you know. So with that mindset, you hear it so much. It gets passed down generation to generation to what we have today. But to your point, Martin, it is more talked about and emphasized in the United States than anywhere else. Like growing up in Colombia, I open a box of crayons, I draw myself, I would choose the color piel, which means skin. And that color, you put it on a piece of paper, it looks, you know, like a neutral pale color versus when I came here and I started drawing myself, I started choosing a light brown, a caramel. It wasn't until I got here that I realized I was brown. And that to me is just the focus of like, I was born really white, went out to the sun and tanned, but I never realized other people noticed that I tanned. So to that comment, it's just crazy that in here that we're actually sitting around here talking about this because it's something that we always deal with. And, you know, for you, Martin, you probably people don't look at you and say, oh, where are you from? And or where you're really from? Because they see you as a white person, right? Like as one of the regular original Americans versus when they look at me, it's like, oh, so where are you from?
Yeah, you look ethnic, right?
Yeah, you're like, exotic.
Yeah, ooh.
And then, you know, tell them you weren't born in the United States. And then it's like, ooh, so you speak Spanish? Oh, no accent? Wow, you speak really good English. And it's that mindset that I can eloquently carry out myself into different languages, you know. So that's all about colorism. I wouldn't be having that conversation if I looked different.
Stereotypes, we've kind of touched on them a little bit, but within like the communities that you're a part of, but also like within the broader sense of it, how have you seen stereotypes like depicted and also in relationship to colorism?
So with stereotypes, I feel like in high school, there's definitely a stereotype of what a Latina are supposed to look like and act like, and that I feel and I experienced it that stereotype sometimes was true, sometimes was not, but it's a stereotype that their students are usually loud, they're lazy, they're in the ESL programs, you know, they wear sneakers, you know, sort of have like a different vibe. And when I went to school and where I went to school, there were probably like, I don't know, like 10 Latinos. And out of those 10, maybe 8 of them were in the ESL class. And I was one of those that weren't in it. So I didn't fit into that stereotype. Therefore, I wasn't Latina enough to be with Latino crew. But because of the way I looked, which again, I'm realizing I look different, I wasn't white enough to be in that class. and I was constantly the only Latina in a classroom taking the honors classes, the AP classes, you know, the college credit classes. And it was then when I realized, like, there is a stereotype of how I'm supposed to be in America versus, again, when I go to Colombia, they're calling me gringa. They don't see me as a Colombian. They see me as an American. So it's sort of that double stereotype that you get here when you're in the United States and also when you get back to that country of where you're from.
Well, it's funny you say that because when you talk about you're not Latina enough, I find myself struggling with that sometimes as well. It's like with family members when I'm with friends who are Latino, who were born in another country and you're like hanging out. It's like, yeah, you're the gringo. You're the outsider, right?
Yeah.
But then when I'm hanging out with my American friends or, you know, just in professional, it's like, well, you're an outsider because you're not from here, right? You don't look like us. You don't sound like us. So it's like, you're not white enough, but you're not Latino enough. So I kind of
play
that dichotomy quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. That's what Christian was talking about earlier, right?
You're not from here and you're not from there. Right. Yeah, you got stuck in the middle.
Ever episode of First Chance is called Stuck in the Middle. So.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
Easy does.
Yeah.
So we've come full circle.
Perfect. Yeah. I mean, the stereotypes are all, and I think we hear them a lot in the media right now with the whole, what, you weren't a part of the gangs of MS-13 from El Salvador or, you know, things like that where it's like, where you see people dress up as like the wall or whatever, you know, where it's like where people just don't know. And so or like when people at work make a comment like andale, andale, like he or, you know, things like that. Or hey, you're not wearing a poncho, like, or am I supposed to have a sombrero?
Oh,
or, you
gosh.
Know, like, you know, things like that where it's just, well, what is a Mexican supposed to look like or a Latino or that's or right. Whatever, you know, we come like Martin said earlier. We come in all shapes, shades, colors, you know, eye shape, anything. My wife is darker. I have friends from Mexico that are like Afro-Mexicans or Asian-Mexican. Right. Just from all over the place. And so I think the stereotype thing is just being able to keep an open mind and say, hey, you know what? Maybe your parents are from Japan and you just ended up in somewhere else and you grew up as Mexican and you may look like a Japanese person, but you identify as being Mexican because that's all you know. Or
it's your culture.
Yeah, it's your culture. And so.
And I have a funny story, not funny actually, but a story about, we talked about the Mexican ponchos. And I feel like when it's a stereotypes and you're in the workplace, you have to bite your tongue not to fight back and bite your tongue of saying, I should be educating you, but I know I probably can't right now. But we were in this office, we're putting stuff away, and there's a bin, and in there it says Mexican ponchos. And I looked at that and it's like, I have ponchos like that, and I'm Colombian, you know, like the stuff like campesinos wear. Mm-hmm. And I looked at that, and I kind of was like, are they made in Mexico? Like, you know, try to, like, play it off. And they're like, oh, no, we're just, you know, they look like Mexican ponchos. I'm like, okay, well, you know, I probably have some too. And my manager looked at me, and she's like, does that bother you? I'm like, yeah, everybody has a poncho, not just in Mexico. And then she's like, but you're not Mexican. I was like, why is that bothering you? I'm like, dude.
It sounds ignorant.
But then you have to, but again, you were in the workplace. You have to realize I'm not here as diversity and inclusion 24/7. Coordinator here to this educate the whole office. I have to move on. But it's sort of those stereotypes that it's like you face them every day and you're just like, all right, Susan, you carry on.
Oh, and right. Probably the most frustrating part is, again, you have somebody who's non-Latino saying, well, why does that bother you? It shouldn't bother you. It's like, you're not walking in my shoes. You know, it's like me trying to tell somebody who is, you know, descendants of slaves, hey, why does this bother you? It's like, I've never walked a day in your shoes. I can't tell you what you should feel and what you shouldn't feel. So that's probably the most frustrating to me. To what you were saying, Christian, it's like, that sometimes people just don't want to get educated.
Correct.
They just feel like they know better.
And another example that kind of gets me while at work is when everybody gets excited right now, especially right now in the fall, we're like, oh, let's go pick apples. And so if as most of you guys know, a lot of Latinos or Mexicans, for the most part, they work picking apples. That's a you know, something that people do. They work very hard. It's not an easy job.
It's a very hard job.
It's a very tough job. And so when people, I actually grew up as a migrant worker son. I never got to do it, but I would go and I learned how to do it, but it was never something that I had to do. But I had other friends that had parents that they had no other choice. That's what they needed to do. Work in the cold, very long hours, very hot. Sometimes people would fall from the ladders that they needed to use and they would get hurt. So when somebody tells me like, hey, I know they mean well, but it's like when somebody tells me like, hey, Christian, do you want to go pick apples for fun? I'm like, no, I don't want to go pick apples. It's like telling somebody that's an African American, like, you want to
cotton.
You want to go pick cotton for fun?
Michael's, or if I go to Hobby Lobby and I see bundles of cotton as decorations,
That's what kind of irks me. But to Nisa's point, like, you got to keep it professional.
That's
right.
I've learned to just keep it professional. I just can't bite my tongue anymore because it's been happening for very long. Not just there, but I think what I found that works is like just keep it professional. Everybody has a lot of different ways that they think. It may or may not be whether it's right, wrong, or indifferent. You know, I get to express what I feel and don't hold it in because I feel like that's worse. In some cases, you just leave that area like just feeling not the right way, probably, and just being able to get it out, I think, has helped me.
I think something you're touching on, and it's a stereotype we don't even sometimes see ourselves, is your legal status in the country. There is a stereotype if you are a documented immigrant and an undocumented immigrant. And I'll tell you another office story and I'll leave it up to that. But I come into the office, somebody is playing a card game and says, hey, Nisa, have you seen this card trick before? And another coworker who was not, had never given me the right vibe, goes, well, she's not an illegal immigrant. Of course she knows what a card trick is. And I was just shocked that this person would say that to me. And to that point, I had never experienced that. You know, you go to schools, you go to college, you get a job. It's sort of like, yes, I'm a citizen. You know what I mean? So that's a stereotype that, to your point, when you're thinking of picking apples, like, I'm pretty sure everybody has stereotype, but if you're picking apples, then you must be undocumented and you must be not knowledgeable. You must be unintelligent. You must not, you know what I mean? So that's like another stereotype that, you know, within colorism, most of the people that are going to be undocumented are going to be darker because they are out on the fields. So it all plays into that.
Well, bless y'all's heart for being professional.
Corporate America.
Says the entrepreneur. That's right. I cannot do it anymore, to be honest with you, because it's... We can't. Okay, it's a crock of shit. Here's the thing. We all have smartphones. We all have TVs. Again, you're choosing not to understand. That's it. So my thing is I don't want to come off as the angry person, because then that's what ends up always happening. I've been in HR plenty of times and I'm looking at you guys and I try to play the little games with the tears and stuff. It don't work. It does not work the same. But it's disheartening because I feel like when you guys have mentioned about how you get treated different, all you guys mentioned about coworkers and professional space, which is very interesting to me because it's not like I haven't dealt with it. But I want to touch on what the family had treated me and outcasted. So, my Puerto Rican side of the family, I have one aunt in particular and an uncle that growing up used to call me an alien. Let that sink in. I'm 32. I feel like I'm just now realizing that not only are they ignorant, but they're going into the comment you made earlier about repeating certain things and not realizing how that's affecting somebody and their growth and identity. Now, at that time, it just pissed me off because it sounded ignorant again. I'm like, how am I an alien? Because, of course, we're all as humans ignorant as to how aliens look.
This side of the family was lighter.
No, it's a mix. It's a mix. Puerto Rican side is completely mixed, but it's just because my dad is from Nicaragua.
Oh.
So when my parents got married, my mom and my dad decided to make sure that my dad became a citizen before they got married. So that it wasn't a play of, like, I'm getting married to your mom. Do you know what I mean? Right. Just for the papers.
Right.
So then even on the retrospect of that, now on my dad's side of the family, I was made fun of then too. Because then at that point, I'm the only one that's speaking Spanish along with my sister, addressing to the elders, reading and writing Spanish. But then, of course, my cousins from the Nicaragua side, they were more Americanized. And it was just like, oh, how are you saying that? That doesn't sound right. Why do you sound like that? Is that an accent? Well, because I sound more Puerto Rican than Nicaraguense. Oh, well, I've been to Nicaragua. What are you being to Nicaragua has to do with anything? Because if you're not living what you are, going to another, to the country that your family is from could have easily just been a vacation. Now, if you're actually identifying that, knowing that, and living and breathing what you are, then what, you just visited Nicaragua? Congratulations, you got a stamp on your passport.
That's right.
Because I've been to Puerto Rico. I know the history. And it's not that I have, like, honestly, it gave me such a bad distaste. But also, my father didn't, was just like, he was over it. And he identified, like, contacted more with the Puerto Rican side and felt the energy, the liveliness, the whole of what is culture, period. But as far as even my aunts and uncle now, I'm an adult now, and they hear it from me. Don't say anything disrespectful about me or my niece and nephew, when it's ironic because their grandchildren, both my aunt and uncle, half Salvadorian, half Mexican. But you guys love them, right? Because they're your niece and nephew, your grandchildren. But you guys treated me wrong because y'all didn't understand. So it's one of those, I can't keep my mouth shut no more, because it's like, you have an obligation the way you guys choose to do it. It's fine, but you guys have an obligation, I feel like, to it's over. Game over.
It goes back to tolerance, right? Yeah. Your tolerance level is so low at this point. You're like, can't take it anymore.
Yeah, that's how I work for myself now. I'm not going to let you insult me two times. If anything, I'm going to make sure you learn something, and then I'm going to make you feel something. Because you made me feel a whole lot. I return the favor.
That's real. Well, and you know, you mentioned just being called alien.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, imagine all this generation that's grown up now, and they're being called illegal.
Right.
Or a resident alien.
Or they're in cages.
Yeah. And you're legal.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, and words matter. I mean, we hear that quite a bit, and it's been more and more emphasized as of lately. But words matter, and they have an importance, and they have a significance.
Right.
So when you see political leaders, people in power, using some of these words, it has an impact. It has a significant impact.
Yeah. It's division. Absolutely. This is why they created race to begin with.
Yeah.
It's systematic racism. It's systematic word using. That's what they're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the stereotypes, like, just they pop up everywhere. Movies, if you look at movies, the way that most of the time Latinos are mowing the grass or cleaning the pool.
Well,
I like that you brought that up. So what do you all think about just, like, media representation? Do you feel like we've come to a day and age where Latinos and Hispanic people are represented accurately?
So I have several different positions. I wear different hats here in the community. You know, I'm involved with our Latin American chamber. I'm involved out in the community with the Latino community. And I had the pleasure of sitting with our local mayor here not too long ago. And I'm very grateful that she asked the question. But to answer that question specifically of, do I feel like we're being portrayed properly or still stereotypically? She asked the question of what can she do to help advance the cause of the Latino community. Mm-hmm. And the response that I gave her was, you know, we are professionals. We don't all just kind of line up in that mold of, you know, blue collar service jobs. We are professionals. We're doctors, we're architects, we're engineers, we're in the finance industry. So that stereotype of, hey, waiters are Latinos and that's all they are, or picking apples and working in the field. That's not all we are. I mean, we're a perfect representation of that. We've got an entrepreneur here. We've got people in the fashion industry, in the finance industry. Granted, I'm in the construction industry, but you know, again, I'm an executive. I'm an executive within our organization. So again, I don't feel like we're properly represented out there, whether it's in media or even with our local representatives in government.
Yeah, I agree. Within Hollywood, the roles that are created to have more representation of Latinos are to feed into those stereotypes. You think of the shows like Modern Family. I love Sofia Vergara. I think she, you know, you got to do what you got to do, but she's breathing, talking, walking all the stereotypes that Colombian women are. Hence, it has some truth to it, but, you know, they look at that and right away, oh, you're Colombian. Oh, how cool. You know, which it's great to have a stereotype that Colombian women are beautiful. But we're also intelligent. We're educated. You know, we're independent. We're not waiting to marry a man to support us. And to your point, Martin, you know, in Hollywood, they're not casting a woman who is from Latino descent or was born in a Latin country as the doctor. No, they're casting her as the loud, very vicious, you know, nurse. You know, so the roles are being given to these women and men, they're the stereotypes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you think of Devious Maids. I like that show. And then when I realized what they were doing, I'm like, wait, why are all the Latin? Why are all the maids Latin? I'm like, wait a minute. You know what I mean? Like, you know, and again, it's great that they're giving – they're opening these roles for women and at least giving some opportunity to be recognized for their talent. But I think as an artist in that field, you at some point you have to say something and say like, you know what? I don't want to be the maid. You know, I'm not a loud person. No, I don't dance. You know, or no, I don't know how to cook. You know, so sort of that, those stereotypes, I think that's within Hollywood that you see, or very exotic women, or, you know, you think of a lot of actors and actresses. They have a thick accent when they speak English, right? Because the viewers cannot believe that you can, again, speak multiple language without a foreign accent, right? Because even within English, everybody has an accent, right? From the South, y'all, you know?
Yeah. I think it's awesome, though, how we're not staying quiet. There's a show... One Day at a Time, I think it was on Netflix.
It got canceled.
And it's unfortunate, but we know why. Because it wasn't a curvy Latin woman. It was a veteran woman, actually divorced with two children, single parent, and her mother in the house. That's accurate.
Reality.
That's real life. Exactly.
Too real.
But, you know, where we're getting some shine, and it's kind of, and it's still weird because I feel like this kind of plays into where even within our community, and like I said, I identify as Afro Latina, so I definitely am aware of my African roots. You have Lupita, how you say her name?
Nyong'o.
She's Kenyan and Mexican. Mm-hmm. You have Zoe Saldana, she's Dominican.
Yep.
You have Laz Alonso, he's Cuban Black. But it's, I feel like when they're playing more, you know, favorite of Black, then it's just like, okay, it's a little bit more acceptable. I'm not knocking it.
You also have Lala. You also have Tatiana Ali.
I know.
Save Me Sister.
Exactamente.
You have Christina Milian.
Okay, keep going. But you see what I'm saying? It's just like, but it's like they're picking and choosing one to mention their Latinness. And that's that part.
Yes.
So it's...
They're trying to work the system, you know?
And I get it, but this goes into how you said, what's her name? Esther Vergara?
Sofia.
So she's doing what she's doing to make her coins. Girl, I ain't mad at you. But it's also the awareness. People are starting to kind of be like a little bit more comfortable. You see, it came to a comfortability.
Well, do you think, can you also like briefly like elaborate on like why is it such a hard concept for people to understand Afro-Latinas or just Afro-Latin people?
Because when you say anything that has to do with Black, it's not right. That's just what it is. You're not going to be treated right. It's not, you're not clean. You know what I'm saying? It's just a disdain.
You can't talk. Speak properly.
Right.
Yeah.
And I'm just supposed to be doing labor work or I'm supposed to be completely submissive to the man. And it's just, I cannot. And so it's been very crazy coming down here, relocated from DC now 7 years. And I know that you were just talking about the difference. I'm coming here, bartender, high volume, known club, DC clubs. I come down here, I'm like, I'm about to crush it. Go to the Epicenter. You think any of those spots gave me a job?
Nope.
And I knew why, because I went and showed up afterwards. And it's because I wasn't a skinny blonde white girl or a skinny Asian girl. But I still fit in a corset and I make it right. But apparently I wasn't the look. So it's one of those things that I'm like, you know, I have to start teaching. And so to the point, the frustration started coming because I got humbled real quick. I didn't realize in the situation I was in down here below the, what is it, Dixon line?
Yes.
Mason Dixon line. It is a complete different game. Yeah. And the only spots that would take me were black owned establishments. And I was like, that's not right. I don't understand. And so it had to be where I had to change my name on a resume. I had to use my middle name. Because then I'm like, Marie.
Hmm.
You know, and it's just like, at least the last name is Spanish. They probably think I'm married, at least to a Spanish man, and maybe not think that I'm Spanish. I got my resume looked up and got called for jobs quicker than I did when I had Yashida. And that is so unfortunate.
Yeah. It is.
Yeah.
But that's just, you know, what it is, what it is.
It all goes back to the stereotypes that each culture or each ethnicity has, right? Like, some can be good, like, Latinos have very good stereotypes too. I mean, we talk about all the bad ones, but we have good ones too. You know, like, we're fun people. We know how to dance. You know, we have great looks. And there's a lot of truth to that. But I, you know, but then there's also like the bad ones, you say. But with each culture, like, you know, we talked about Indian, and my fiance is from India. And we talked about Indian people. Like, I was trying to get into the technology sector, and I had such a hard time getting an interview. And I feel like, for the same reason, it was because of my name versus somebody who has a name that sounds like they're from India. They automatically assume, because of the stereotype, oh, you're from India? Yep. You'll be great at technology. Yep. Right. IT. You know, so you talk about the stereotypes. It all goes back into that. And it all goes back, how do you play with it, right? What cards are you being handed?
Right. So that's the whole, okay, I'm black, I'm Latin, or which one am I? I hate the boxes, because then that goes into the whole, are you African-American, but you cannot be of Hispanic.
They can't understand that, yeah.
So then which box am I supposed to hit? One or more races, then I put, if I can't tell you what I am, then that's the box I'm going to put. It don't matter.
And then you can't check off other then, because you get classified into like a whole other different category. So
you can't.
I just recently applied for a mortgage, and the last part of the
did you put white for that one?
The last part of the well, actually,
the rate will be lower.
The last part of the app, it's all about your race, and I was like, so the guy, well, this is, you know, I'm legally binded to ask you these questions, blah, blah, blah. And I was like,
why
does it matter? You know,
my bank account.
And so I just put, I'm still going to give you money, still worth the same amount, you know? So at the end of the day, I was like, you know what? N.A. Like, I don't want to answer, you know, and that's exactly what I did. It saved me like 5 minutes. Yeah. So, and then just to piggyback more on the like on the stereotype thing at work, funny story, when I moved from the West Coast, San Francisco to be exact, to here, when the first day that I showed up, it was me, the only person that had a Latino last name. Everybody else had English or name. And so I was the only one that was e-verified. Where the HR person, hey Christian, let's go to the back and check together, you know, to make sure your social security is good. And so I was new, like, still, I was like, that time I did bite my tongue. And I knew exactly what was going on. I knew for sure. I don't even know, I was born in San Diego, whatever. I had nothing to worry about. But I think the satisfaction to me was when we looked it up together, and everything was cleared.
Yeah.
And I was like, I could have told you that, but you know what I mean? So just feeling that, coming from the West Coast where there's a lot more Latinos and diversity. Just more diversity in general, especially in San Francisco, It was never like a, it was easy, you know, like I didn't have to worry about that or think about that. Even with the gay community, like the gay community was so open and I had a lot, tons of gay friends and, you know, they like, I knew they weren't shy about it. Like they didn't, they felt like they could totally come out. And I came over here and it was just like, whoa, it was more of a secret, you know? So it really took me back when I came to the East Coast, specifically Charlotte, because, oh yeah, Charlotte's so diverse and this and that. It is to a certain extent. However, it's
compared
still
to the rest of the South.
Yeah. It still has that heritage. Yeah. So, it was a big eye opener when I went to the epicenter. And I saw two parties going on. One party was an African American party. Mm-hmm. Well, let's call it a club urban party.
Urban night.
And then there was a band playing. And you could totally see like somebody parted the sea. And it was like, I was like, oh my gosh. Like, it was my first year here. And so just, you know, the whole stereotype where people, I know this is, has nothing to do anymore with like the Latino community, but just stereotypes in general, colorism. I saw it just literally black and white, and there was nothing in between, and it blew me. I almost fell to the ground because I couldn't believe it. I had never seen it like that, so just blunt in your face, and it took me way back. So at that point, I was kind of asking myself, did I make the right decision to move to Charlotte?
That's real.
You know, and because I just left everything that I know back home and moved to this city that I've never been to. And at first, which I thought was great because of the Southern hospitality and this and that. And so until, you know, I showed up to my first day to work and then I went to the epicenter to check things out. And I was like, whoa.
You felt like you were in a time machine, huh?
Yeah. Like, I was like, did I just go back 20 years or
so
longer?
Interesting, because it's the same kind of conversation I feel like I have with so many first gens.
And I take it a little bit differently. Like, I feel like I'm here in Charlotte for a reason. I feel like I'm here in the Southeast for a reason. And a few years ago, I had the opportunity to leave and go to the Northwest part of the country. And I just felt like, I mean, I've dug some pretty deep roots in here, in this area, and I feel like there's still so much to be taught. I feel that there's still so much to be done. There's such great opportunity here, and you know, we talk about diversity and the power that diversity brings, and the importance of diversity within our communities. And there's so much left to do, and you know, just kind of looking around when we were talking about the whole media experience. And I kind of pulled up on my phone here. I remember watching the movie Overboard. The remake of Overboard.
Yeah.
And Eugenio Derbez, who was the main character. Mm-hmm. You know, I went in and just kind of dug into his story. And it's amazing how he and some of the other actors in there, Eva Longoria, how they brought people with them. And it's like how they're elevating the Latino community within the television and movie industry.
Yeah.
So I look at how I can do that in my day-to-day life.
Right.
And how I can help, you know, maybe it's just helping somebody who is, you know, struggling with, you know, whatever. Maybe they're having some of the same experiences we've had. Yeah. But how can I make their life easier? How can I make their experience here within our community better?
Right.
So that's kind of the approach I take of it. There's still so much left to do here.
Yeah.
How can we educate? How can we bring up our people?
Yeah. Right before you you started saying that, I was going to say, now that I've been here 9 years, going on 10, I've learned a lot of the.
Y te estás poniendo viejito.
Yeah. We all are, actually, not just me.
Shade.
Yeah. I was just gonna say that I've learned so much how the fact that we're more so all the same than we are different.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the first thing that you notice sometimes is like, oh well, you're different because of X, Y, Z.
Yeah.
But then I go back, I'm like, hey, like a lot of people in the South, they love food.
Yeah.
I love food. We all love food. Food brings everybody together.
Yeah.
You know, so that's always cool. Like, Every time I have an event at home, a lot of people say, hey, you had a lot of different types of people here. And I was like, yeah, because I enjoy the diversity. I like bringing people together. And to Martin's point, it's where I can feel comfortable and say, hey, you know what? My buddy Martin, he works for in construction, and I got another buddy that works in like the trash business or whatever. Maybe you guys can link up and do something together, or you know. So it's where
we can build and throw away a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, where people can come together and actually, or if somebody's looking for a job or whatever, and they just got here, where I didn't necessarily have somebody to really kind of guide me or say, yeah, hey, you know what, do this or do that.
I feel that. So going off of that, I think we should all finish with that. But I feel like when we were talking about it, yeah, I get fed up and I kind of, you know, I just let them have it. But like it was to the point where I do educate. And so my way of doing that is I create, I feel that I'm a culture curator, event curators.
There you go.
There you go. Couldn't get it out. I'm so Spanish. it's my responsibility. That's how I feel it. So I have a few projects right now. Serving the Culture kind of focus on like bringing chefs, more focused towards the Black chefs and stuff, working on with more Latin chefs and stuff like that. It's just we're super limited. But it's just focused on the music and the culture of that, and then interpretation of food and cocktails. My event, I'm going to drop it November 17th, Champagne and Chicken. It's just that. It's champagne and chicken. Champagne is always associated with celebration, good times, and who doesn't love bubbles, right? And it's chicken. It's boiled. It's different seasonings. It's just, it's good. It's fun. It's out in the open. Families, friends, pets, everybody comes. Like, that's how I'm able to give back to my community and also try to bring other talents in the same industry and trying to give them some shine and give them some work. That's how I kind of do my part.
Yeah, I definitely agree with Mart when you were saying you're here for a reason. Again, growing up the first 10 years in Colombia, it's not like I wasn't proud of being Colombian, but I was just a person that happened to be born and raised in Colombia. I didn't know of this pride. I think there's a big thing of like being like American pride. Like I never had that in Colombia. Normally it was just, I'm Colombian. It's not a big deal. And growing up, again, I knew I was Colombian, but there was never like that pride of Colombian or American. It was more like who I am as a person. Like I like candy and I like doing other stuff. And, you know, I want to be famous one day, sort of so speak, when I was a kid. And when I got into the corporate world, that's when I realized like I need now to educate. Like I need now to know myself and tell people, oh, well, in Colombian culture, you do this. And when I switched careers of being, in events and switching over to the technology side, and I saw the lack of diversity in there. Now I need to tell people more about where I come from. And that's the first thing I say, like, where are you from? It's like, well, I consider myself from Charlotte because I was raised here. I went to school from elementary to college here. Clearly, I liked it. But I was born in Colombia and raised there. And, you know, now being in a relationship with a different culture, like, you know, with a person that's from a different country, I've also educated myself on that culture. And that's one of the things I love the most about it is like we learn about each other, and now I'm sharing that with my friends, with people at work of like, you know what, I'm Colombian, but I also know about other cultures, you know what I mean? I know about other traditions, and it all goes back to being able to educate. And I cannot emphasize, like with your friends, I feel like they're going to know you and they're going to be respectful. It's with the people that don't have that sort of relationship with you, that care for you, or even that appreciation of where you're coming from. That's where we have to work. And you can only change things when you're in the inside. You can only change things when you're repetitively day after day showing up, showing face. Like, yeah, you said something insulting, but you know what? I'm going to be your boss one day. So it's okay. Let me show you how it's done, because that mindset has to end. It has to die with that generation. So we can move forward. Mic drop.
Yeah, don't drop that one. That's expensive. Yeah.
That's this one.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed what you heard, subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts. It helps other people find us. We can also be found on SoundCloud and wherever else you get your podcasts. Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at First Gens. Now that's the number one, STGENS. Plus, you can get extra content on our website, firstgenspodcast.com. First Gens was created by Perrine DeShield, my wonderful cousin, and the show is co-hosted by Perrine and myself, Sky Wilson. All music heard in this episode was created by Nick Stubblefield, who's our amazing musical composer. Thank you to our roundtable crew. First Gens is a proud member of Huga, an amazing co-working space based out of Charlotte, North Carolina. Thanks for all your love and support. That's it.
Have you ever had a Latino goodbye? It's like an hour long bye. Yeah,